As it was in the days of Noah, so will it be at the coming of the Son of Man. In those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day that Noah entered the ark. There was this, the people at the time of Noah, this time, you know, when God practically wiped out everybody on the face of the earth, except for Noah and his family. And everybody else, except for Noah, was taken completely off guard. They didn't really see what the big deal was. They just seemed to think, okay, everything's just going to keep on going very much the way it's going. And the judgment of God came as a huge surprise to them. There's another place where this is told for us as well, in the account of the last judgment that the Lord himself gives to us in the 25th chapter of St. Matthew's Gospel, where he talks about when the Son of Man will come in his glory at the end of the world, and he'll divide all the people into the sheep and the goats, and to those who are the damned, the goats there, he'll say to them, he'll say, you know, you saw me hungry and you did not feed me. You saw me naked and you didn't clothe me. You saw me sick and in prison and you didn't visit me. And what do they say to him? They go, when did we do that? When did we not do that? You know, again, they're surprised. They're surprised by the judgment of God. Well, that's because our moral life, the way that we live our Christian faith, is a life of habit. It was also, if you remember that story of the Last Judgment, a surprise for the blessed as well. When Jesus told them, oh, you saw me hungry and you fed me, and you saw me naked and you clothed me, and you saw me without, you know, homeless, and you gave me shelter and you visited me. And they go, when did we do all that? Because for both the blessed and the damned, the way they lived out their life, their moral decisions have become matters of habit. That's the way it works for us as human beings. We call those habits of the blessed virtues. And we call those habits of the damned vices. That's literally where we get the word vicious from in English. Someone who is vicious is someone whose life has been overtaken by these bad habits called vices. And that was the case of the people at the time of Noah. They were literally vicious people. They were habitually enslaved and ensnared by evil. And they didn't even realize it. That's what habits do to us. They didn't even realize it. And so they were, this is a warning for us. The Lord is telling us today, wake up. Wake up. The Son of Man is coming. Look at yourselves. Are you ready for the coming of the Son of Man? Or have you fallen into these vices, these bad habits, so much so that you're really not even aware of them? And this is something, I read a book when I was in seminary. I had a wonderful class. It was a class, believe it or not, on the virtue of prudence. The virtue of prudence basically means the ability to know right from wrong and to choose what is right. That's what the virtue of prudence is. It's very much the same thing as having a good conscience, okay, practically speaking. But the professor was a wonderful, he was a Dominican priest, and he was sort of like the absent-minded professor. He always looked like he had just gotten out of bed in the morning. His habit was all crooked, and his hair was all a mess, kind of like mine today, and that sort of thing. And he was a treat to go to his class. It was like sitting in spiritual direction. And when he preached at Mass, he really had, you know, the Dominicans are called the Order of Preachers. And he was an amazing preacher, not so much for any razzmatazz, but just for the how incredibly profound and solid every single word that came out of his mouth was. Well, that was like it was sitting in class with him. And he had us read this book, and it was about this point. This point of being blinded by vice, of getting lured into this complacency so we don't even realize sort of how bad things have gotten. We've all heard the, you know, the example of the of the frog in the pot of boiling water, you know, how the, you know, it gets in there and the water, I don't know if it's true or not, but it's a nice example. You know, you gradually turn the water up and he'll just stay in there till it boils to death. But if you put him in there, if the water was really hot and you first, he'd jump right out. But if you gradually turn, and that's what happens with us. We get ensnared by vice and lured in more and more. And that's what this book was about on a very dramatic example. And that is how the Nazis co-opted people into collaborating with them in the final solution, as they called it, of the Jewish problem, as they called it, what we now call, really call the Holocaust, much more truthfully. Because the Nazis, left to themselves, could never have accomplished this. It was simply too big of a job. It just looked, the logistics of it. They could never have carried it out. Except they co-opted people little by little into collaborating with them. This is in a very famous book. It's called Eichmann in Jerusalem. It's about the trial of Adolf Eichmann, who was one of the main, actually one of the people who I think did for the finals, did a lot of the logistics literally for it, you know, how you manage all this. And he was escaped at the end of the Second World War. I think he was living in Argentina, and the Israeli Secret Service tracked him down, and he was taken back for this trial in Jerusalem. And a famous philosopher covered this and wrote an account of it, this book called Eichmann in Jerusalem. Her name is Hannah Arendt. And she came up with this. One of the things that was interesting was how so many people at this trial came up, and in hindsight, they were giving their testimony of these incredibly evil things they were cooperating with and helping to happen in a very matter-of-fact way. And she coined this phrase, it's become sort of a famous phrase, the banality of evil. It means just sort of the ordinariness of evil, that evil just becomes like, oh well, that's just what we do. And we should be very aware of this in our own culture. This can happen to us individually. It can happen to a whole culture, like it did with the Nazis. But for example, I mean, I think in our own day, you know, just as now we look back on people who were very complacent with the institution of slavery in our country. Very, very complacent about that. And we thought, how could that be? How could people not object to this grave moral evil and this great offense against human dignity? And yet in our own day, there are things like that that I think at our times, and I think in the future, people will look back at our culture. I'm not talking about anybody individually, but at our culture and say, for example, how could those people have tolerated and collaborated in abortion, the killing of innocent human beings on a vast scale? How can that be? Well, it's because of this reality of being lured in a sense, put to sleep morally by our vices. And we have to wake up. We have to wake up. One of the ways in this book, the author of this book said there were certain groups of people, though, that the Nazis were unsuccessful with in getting them to collaborate. And those sort of the most outstanding group actually were the Danes. And the Danes just simply refused to collaborate at all. They wouldn't even take the first step. And they were led very heroically by their king. Denmark is a very tiny country. It's right against Germany. It was, you know, captured by the Nazis very quickly. And the king was still there. And for the morale of his people, he would go out and ride his horse in some big park in Copenhagen every day just so that people would see him. And the first thing the Nazis tried to do there to discriminate and set the Jews apart was, okay, the Jews are going to have to start wearing Star of David armbands with these yellow Stars of David on them. And, you know, people might say, oh, well, okay, they're going to have to do that. That's unfair. But, you know, I guess we could go along with that. Mm-mm. That first day, the king of Denmark came out for his ride with a yellow Star of David armband on his arm. And the next day, everybody in Denmark wore one. Everybody. And every single time that the Nazis tried to impose something, the Danes from the king on down figured out some way to undermine it. Until finally, their underground in Denmark gathered up all the Jews in Denmark on one night, gathered them all up, and took them by boat to Sweden, which was a neutral country, very close to Denmark. And so practically all the Jews of Denmark were saved from the Holocaust. But it's because they would not collaborate with evil. They were wide awake. They saw what was going on, and they said, "We will not do this." And that's the way that we have to be. We can't be lured into the, you know, thing saying, "Oh, that's not that really." Do you ever catch yourself saying, like, "I really shouldn't say this, but I really shouldn't do this, but"? Well, just stop right at the "but," okay? I shouldn't do this. Good, don't. Yeah. I shouldn't say this. Don't. All right? That's the place to stop, right there. Don't go into the "but." The "but" is the place where you start getting lured in and you start falling asleep morally. And pretty soon, you might find yourself in a place you never thought you'd be. That's what happened with these people who started collaborating. "Well, okay, maybe I can go along with this. Maybe I can go along with that." You know, sometimes you'll hear people say things. Maybe you've heard yourself say this about maybe some movie that you've seen or something like that, or some song that you've heard. So, "Oh, this is a really great song," or "It's a really great movie," or whatever. "Well, you know, there may be some bad parts, but on the whole, it's really good," right? Well, what about if I'd invited you over for breakfast, and I had cooked up this great big bowl of scrambled eggs? There was piping hot, steaming. I come out and I say, "Here, have some scrambled eggs. Only a few of them were rotten." How many of you would eat those eggs? I hope none. And yet we allow ourselves to eat and consume and be exposed to the rotten eggs of evil a lot of times by these little compromises. And they lure us in. And I'm sure we've all had this experience, that all of a sudden we wake up Sunday and say, "What have I just done? What have I just said?" You know, sometimes I'll hear people use the expression like, about describing something they've done, and they'll say, that really isn't like me." And I want to go, "Well, it seems to me it's just like you. I mean, you're the one who did it, aren't you?" You know? It's not the way we may like to look at ourselves or think of ourselves, but we wake up soon and say, "Wow, I just did something I never thought I would do. Or I just said something I never thought I would say." This season is the season to deal with that. To be ready for Jesus. To be ready for Jesus, certainly at Christmas, but to be ready for his coming in glory at the end of time, which might be this afternoon. We don't know. And when he comes, one way I've heard judgment described is that we just basically see ourselves and we are seen exactly as we are. You know, we've gotten really good in our culture, especially with social media things, at kind of projecting images of ourselves as the way we'd like to be seen. But all of that, you know, all your social media stuff, that's all going to be stripped away. And it's just going to be you, the real you, you know? And if that's a scary thought to you, then we better get to work. And that's what this season is about. But remember, it's about the coming of Jesus, which is not really supposed to necessarily scare us into being good. But cause us to desire it, because we want to be with him. You know, that's another thing the devil loves to get us to do, is to forget about Jesus. And so in this season, come to know Jesus, especially through the prophets of the Old Testament. They start, like we heard from Isaiah. Isaiah's all the way through Advent. He starts to talk about, in his imagination and his experience with it, how wonderful it is will be the coming of the Holy One of God. Today we have this experience, the line that Jesus describes himself in the gospel, the Son of Man. In one of the readings out of the Divine Office yesterday from the book of Daniel, or maybe it was at the reading at Mass, was talking about this figure, the Son of Man. He comes from the Old Testament. And what a contrast is the Son of Man with all the evil and corruption in our world. And in contrast to that is the reign of the Son of Man. And so come to seek and to long for Jesus in this time of Advent. All right? You know, we have not started celebrating Christmas yet. You may have, you know, there are no Santa Clauses in here. I've got on purple. You know what? This is a season of preparation. It's a season of repentance. It's a season to come to know ourselves and to change. And that's another great thing, too. If you find some of those things in yourself that you're not too happy about, don't just say, this is another line I'll hear sometimes. People will say, well, that's just the way I am. Well, fine. Change then. Change. Don't be that way anymore. You know? That's what Jesus says to us. You know, the world and other people will very often say that to us. They'll peg us. They'll say, that's the way you are. That's not what Jesus says. Jesus says, no, you're free. You are free. You are free. You are a son of God or a daughter of God, a child of God, to live in holiness, in righteousness all the days of your life, to come to know me, to know what it means to be a child of God, to have that longing for the coming of the day of the Lord, not to look at it in dread, but as the early Christians did, to say, come, Lord Jesus, come. But we've got to start with that first step of looking in at ourselves and finding those places where we've deceived ourselves, where we allow ourselves to fall into vice. And the most dangerous ones are the ones we're not aware of, actually. So again, maybe ask somebody to help you out. Those of you who are married, ask your spouse. They can help you out, you know. They're usually too nice to point it out to you, but you know, or ask your parents, or ask your children, or ask your brothers and sisters, whoever. They'll let you know maybe your unseen faults, because those are the unknown ones. Those are the most dangerous ones, the ones that get us by surprise. Because on the day of judgment, the best surprise is no surprise, except the surprise that the blessed had, which was because of their virtues that had become habitual. They thought, well, yeah, that's just what I do. That's what I do. I feed the hungry, and I clothe the naked, and I visit the sick, and I don't think anything about it. I'm not even aware of it, because that's just what I do, and that's who I am. I am a child of God.